right, so ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Hot Dogs and Caviar, coming to you live from Hot Dogs and Caviar Studios in, where do we want to be from? Are we coming to you live from the 33rd floor of the Raffles Hotel in Singapore? No, I don't speak the language here. I'm lying. We're coming to you live from our living rooms. But the point is, it's another great episode of Hot Dogs and Caviar. We've got Tarver, Super King King, in the house.
Hey-o.
Who is just exceptionally bald. And then we have the slightly less bald, but also no slouch, Nate Spincake Whiting. Who has just opened a Kirkland Club soda like he's some kind of warrior. I am the mouth
just
of
water.
Sudden. I've got this Topo Chico seltzer water.
With a full head of hair.
Apparently has booze in it. We'll see how this goes. A full head of hair. If I was going to go bald, it would have started a long time ago. I didn't go bald. I went fat.
I went both. Cheers.
Yeah, but you're more talented than me and Nate put together, so you can go fuck yourself.
No, that's not true at all.
Cheers.
How's it going, guys?
Good, man. I fucking miss you, dudes.
I feel like we've been trying to record this particular episode of the podcast for approximately 1,000 years.
Yeah. It's been at least 6 weeks.
I mean, it hasn't, but it feels like it has. The thing is, the guys at home, they don't know how slow I edit them, so I can sort of make it feel like less time has gone by. But yeah. Normally we have a couple in a can. This time we were like, no, let's just like.
Well, we're gonna timestamp this episode because in honor of the 4th of July. We have to salute the greatest American hero, Joey Chestnut.
Yeah, the guy is more of an American than Razor Ramon. And I use those words very deliberately.
You know who Joey Chestnut is, Tarver?
I'm so sorry. I don't. I have no
he
idea who that
is. He's the hot
dog so
eating
sorry.
Champion.
He
of
won
the
hot dog eating
contest. I saw that. Yeah.
15 years in a row.
The cat ate 64 hot dogs.
Yeah,
in 10
64
minutes,
in 10 minutes.
That was a disappointment. Awesome.
Right.
But I usually like, crushes
see,
like
some
70.
Animal rights activist like ran
yep.
up on stage yeah. and he like headlocked him.
And Joey Chestnut took him down like a Times Square bouncer. Like,
took him right down and kept eating.
Kept going.
If you're and such a badass won. That you can drop a guy like a bad habit while you're still eating hot dogs, you are a warrior. God, easily like if I had to pick the top five most American guys ever, he would be on the list.
Oh, yeah.
right up there with Lex Luger and like, I don't know who else.
Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan, sure. Let's just do it. It's,
Sergeant
it's,
Slaughter.
You say Lex Luger?
It's pretty much four pro wrestlers and Joey Chestnut.
Norris.
Yeah, Chuck Norris, Chuck. Okay, you're right.
Okay.
Lex Luger, Joey Chestnut, Hulk Hogan, Chuck Norris, and
you remember all those old Chuck Norris like jokes, like those memes
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah,
it cracks me up every time.
Okay. You know what? Impromptu funny story. So okay, so just in case anyone is has not followed along at home, Lion Cooks find the dumbest shit funny, and so we were doing Chuck Norris jokes all the time, and Sheree McDowell, love you. One of the most talented women I've ever met in my life. She did not have any patience for the Chuck Norris jokes. And she was like, oh, you guys are so fucking stupid with your Chuck Norris jokes. I'm so tired of it. And I was like, come on, Sheree, they're funny. And she goes, go ahead, crack me up. Tell me a funny one. And I was like, okay, Chuck Norris wears a live rattlesnake as a condom. And she's like, oh, God damn it. And if anything, I was actually in more trouble because I made her laugh.
That's no, awesome.
Sheree deals with Sheree has dealt with a lot of my crap over the years.
A lot, yeah.
She's also the one that, she listened to the first episode of the podcast where we talked to you, Darver, and she texted back and she's like, I'm impressed that you guys have managed to make a conversation about fine cuisine about wieners and pee. And I was like, who are you talking to right now?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like
why is it though that Joey Chestnut can eat all those freaking hot dogs, right? And he's an American hero, but I go to a kid's birthday party and eat 9 hot dogs and I'm in embarrassment. What the hell is that all about?
Take it easy, Nate.
Jesus. You ate 9 hot dogs?
Nate, that's not why you're an embarrassment. That's okay.
Okay. One of the things on my bucket list, there's an Uncle Al's hot dog in Virginia Beach. I grew up with Uncle Al's hot dogs. There used to be one when I was a kid, and me and my brothers and my dad would go there all the time. We would get them all the way with chili and cheese and stuff. And like, they had plaques all over the wall of who ate the most hot dogs. Like, all those plaques. I'm like, I could fucking destroy every single one of these fucking plaques.
You could. Yeah. I remember one time I was driving cross country with you. I don't remember why. We were on the way back from New Orleans and we pulled into a gas station. I was like, dude, let's just get I'm restauranted out. Let's just get gas station hot dogs. And yeah. I was going in to get the hot dogs and you were buying the gas and you were like, so how many hot dogs do you want? Like 6? And I looked at you and I didn't mean to be rude, but I just looked at you like, why would you ask me that? And you were like, or like 2. And it was like one of the most Tartar King moments of my
life. How many do you want, like 6?
I was like, I guess, sure.
The plaques on the walls of Uncle Al's are like 16 or like 20. I'm like, man, I could fucking do 16 hot dogs without breaking a sweat. Like, yeah. Fucking no problem. I want my name. I want my name on the wall.
You know what? There's just no way for me to avoid saying the thing that I'm about to say. And all the listeners at home can bolster us. Let's do an all hot dogs and caviar hot dog eating contest.
Dude.
And may God have mercy on our souls. Yes. No, this is happening. It's happening.
Let's do this. Yeah. Let's do this.
Yeah. The thing is, I think I'm going to lose.
Oh, but, I'm definitely gonna lose.
Yeah, no. Oh, Nate, you're pukey ass. You're dead. I'll kill you.
I'll try though.
It's gonna destroy both of us. Yeah,
I'm gonna win. All right, so
let's play. Tarver, we know, but it's still gonna be a lot of fun.
I'm not even bragging. Like, it's not even a brag. It's not a brag thing to brag about. It's not.
It's just a fact. It's just a fact. You're gonna win. But like, let's. Okay, so let's agree that let's have regulation hot dogs. So no fancy brands because we all have to get the same brand. So let's do like Oscar Mayer or Nathan, something you can get at the grocery store. Or even we could just do it would be better if they weighed the exact same because we don't have to talk about the total ounces of hot dog weight.
It's now, like 116 packs or something, the 16 count, something, you know, like the...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, can we all agree on Nathan's?
Yeah,
I'm down. Nathan's. Yeah, awesome.
Nathan's, and now we're also gonna agree on 1 bun per dog.
Yeah. Wait, what? Why would we do 2 buns per dog?
No, I was saying, are buns gonna be a thing?
Like a 3-way, like 2 giners and a wiener.
You just said giner.
I ain't man enough for that.
Nate said giner.
Giner. oh boy.
Oh, let's do this, dude. For real. I'm super down for it.
And then what are we just getting, like store brand buns or
store brand? Like, yeah, the just regulation. I mean, if you want to be a masochist and get like Pepperidge Farm nice buns, that's fine.
Dude, let's do like Wonder. Like,
no,
Wonder
there needs
buns.
To be rules. Yeah, Wonder is cool. All right. Yeah. I gotcha.
But the thing, what I'm saying is that like any bun that you'd get that would be like fancier is going to be harder to eat. So just get
some
brand.
Of them are smaller.
Are they?
Aren't the hot dog buns that like
most of them are bigger? Never mind.
Or Wonder Bread? Isn't that right or no?
I mean, let's not overthink this. We're just 3 dumb guys that are trying to have a hot dog eating contest.
We overthink everything though. So let's be honest.
Of all the things to be perfectionists about, this is
it. Don't matter,
guys. This is the single best idea we've ever had.
And ever.
All right.
And we've created Michelin level menus.
We boil in the dogs.
Like we've created genuine culinary marvels for people. And this is the best idea we've ever had. What does that
we've
say?
We've cooked for Relais Gourmand. We've cooked for like five-star, five-diamond meals for
one time. I made dinner for the really, really hot supermodel that Rod Stewart was fucking. And this is better. This is better than that. I also made dinner for Rod Stewart, but who cares about him? But the girl that
Who's
he was
the rapper that we cooked for that one time at Woodlands? They showed up like super late and was like, I want a pizza.
That was one of Run DMC, I think.
Yeah.
I forget which one, though.
I was not there for that.
Yeah, he like showed up at like midnight and was like, I want a pizza. Nate and I were, and whoever was there.
Yeah, it was
like,
me and you. We were like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I made pizza for Earth, Wind, and Fire once. That was pretty cool.
Really? That's awesome.
All right, so we're having a hot dog eating contest. I think that we should do videos.
That sounds like Jordan stuff right there.
Oh my God, Jordan. We should invite Jordan.
Please.
We should make it the Hot Dogs and Caviar Invitational Hot Dog Challenge.
That might be somebody who could give Tarver a run for his money.
Yeah, and the thing is, I see Tarver, there's blood in the water. He's like, yes. Yes.
If it was chugging, you two would be neck and neck, but no.
Oh my God, I was trying to eat well, so like trying to be healthy and stuff. So this is just an excuse to go balls out. So I'm super excited.
I'm excited.
Let's get Jordan and John Huff and all, and like I bet
John Huff is too civilized for this.
Who's too civilized for hot dogs?
Oh, no, I'm just saying John Huff is too civilized to eat 60 hot dogs in 10 minutes we will.
Sure.
He's like,
you mean combine, right? There's no way I'm putting down more than six or seven of those things.
Nate, given that in our professional lives, you've always kind of been in a position of authority over me, so I don't get to say this very often, but get your fucking shit together.
Man up, dude. You can do it.
Yes, sir. I'm going to gag those wieners right on down.
God damn, that's the best thing you've ever said. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we're hot dogs and caviar. We're gagging wieners.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
You're stretching for the hot dog competition already. You're formidable, dude.
Yeah, no, I'm going to start getting in shape. I'm just going to start
watching. And we also got, like, maybe this is like too much detail. But, like, we also talk about condiments. Maybe, like, I mean, we just do like mustard. Or, like, cheese and mustard.
The rule for the Central Park contest is that condiments are optional. So I think
going yellow mustard then.
If you want mustard, then yeah, it'll slow you down. But if you had somebody else mustarding
that
your dog,
acid'll keep it moving though. I think keep you salivating.
If I'm gonna eat 60 hot dogs, I'm gonna want some mustard in there. God, how many hot dogs do we buy for this? Like, what's worse, getting 60 hot dogs and eating them, or getting 60 24. Hot dogs and not being able to eat them?
We can take the hot dogs and go fishing with them after.
Yeah.
Yes,
catfish.
Hot dogs, good bait.
Yeah, fish are stupid. They love hot dogs.
You'll probably catch more turtles or anything, but that wouldn't be cool.
Catfish love hot dogs.
Catfish love hot dogs. Eels love hot dogs.
Yeah.
have you ever eaten eel?
Yeah. Freshwater, like really good stuff, and like a Mr. Happy's eel is awesome.
Is Kobe still there? Is Mr. Happy still around?
No, long gone. Long.
I never even knew his name. I just knew he was Mr. Happy.
I don't know his name either. Idea. Mr. Happy.
Yeah, we shared Christmas presents. I don't even know his name.
Like, I remember one time I went in there like with D, and you were there, and you were at the sushi bar, and I sat at a table. And she was like,
really?
Is this weird that we're not asking him to come sit with us? And I was like, no, this is his church. And D goes, okay.
Really? I don't remember that at all.
You saw me. You had one of the Fergus Henderson books with you, and you clearly wanted to sit and show it. And the thing is, I'm like, this is when we had only met like 8 months before. So I was your line cook, and you were the chef. We weren't bros yet. And I was like, okay, I'm going to leave him alone. And D was like concerned that it was strange that we didn't ask you to come sit with us. I was like, he's here. He has a book. He doesn't get a lot of time to himself. I'm going to leave him the fuck alone.
Yeah, that's probably a good move.
I mean, you know, whole jokes aside, you know, this is actually probably one of the more interesting stories that we've shared, because that the intensity that you feel when you're cooking at that level all the time, it's like you're a cooking bomb. Like and I don't mean cooking like you're physically cooking. I mean, cooking like cooking off, like as in an ammunition explosion. Like there's so much mental and emotional heat that goes into cooking at that level that if, when you want to be left alone, you want to be left alone.
That's like an interesting point, because I actually had talks about this with a therapist a few times. I don't know about you guys, but like I like keeping my house abnormally cold, and I never put the two together, but I associate being cold with being off from work.
Yes.
Is that the same?
It's not the same thing, but I really, really, really don't like going to a restaurant and seeing the show kitchen.
Yeah.
Like if I'm watching someone cook, I'm at work. So I remember Dee and I had a wedding anniversary at Edmund Toast, and they put us on the show kitchen looking directly into the garbage station. And so I just watched a guy make charcuterie plates and cheese plates all night. And I felt like I was making charcuterie plates and cheese plates all night. I know show kitchens are fun. I want nothing to do with that. If I wanted to look into a kitchen, I'd just go to work. I feel you. Same kind of thing. So are you guys cool with killing the rest of this episode with me just telling you guys what I had in New York and like getting your thoughts on it?
Hell yeah.
I keep thinking about that fish course with the artichoke.
It was so good.
That sounded so good.
If it wasn't for that course, Danielle would have been just another Michelin 3-star restaurant. I'm sorry, they're only 2-star, but you know what I mean? Like at that top level. The thing is, it's almost an embarrassment of riches. I've eaten at that top level enough times that it's possible for a meal like that to bore me. I know you guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
You can go into a place and be like, this is perfect and not interesting. And the thing is to get like that the first, like, do you guys remember the first really, really good restaurant meal you ever had?
Mm-hmm.
Like mine was at MK in Chicago, Michael Cornick's place. It wasn't even 3-star in the Chicago Tribune, but it knocked my hair back because I'd never been at that level. I'd never been near that level. And the trouble is once you're at that level enough times, you're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, good for you. You put some foie gras on a plate. You opened a jar of caviar. Lottie fucking duh.
Yeah, and it's pretty easy to get callous. It's like, sensory overload when you're in it.
Especially if you're the roughnecks in the back that actually have to do this shit. Yeah, I'm like,
overload, man. It's like,
I mean, if you cook a langoustine perfectly and then eat it right out of the pan, what langoustine in a dining room is going to compare to that?
Yep.
And so it's like guys like us, we have it's not enough to be perfect. We have to have compositional elegance. And if it wasn't for that fish dish at Danielle, I might've been willing to say that was a disappointing meal, but that fish dish was so goddamn perfect. So unbelievably great. But I was like, you know what? Amazing. Amazing. And the thing is,
that's awesome.
There was nothing wrong with the rest of the meal. It's just that dish was what required. Like if you, being an ultra fine dining chef is kind of like going to preschool at the Louvre. You know what I mean? Like if every day you're surrounded by perfect works of art,
I see what you're saying. Okay. Took me a second. All right.
I realized from the
Louvre,
sounds.
The bathroom?
The Louvre, Louvre.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like if you're surrounded.
I was trying to be funny, dick.
I am a dick. If you're surrounded by astounding perfection every day, and if achieving that perfection isn't just a lifetime goal, it's what you have to do every fucking day, then you can really develop some like strange perspective. And the thing is, I think that's why guys like us are able to walk into you have $1,000 meal at an astoundingly good restaurant and be like, not that better. Whereas on the other hand, we could go get a taco from a really good taco place and be like, this is the best thing I've ever eaten. because the taco place isn't trying to do anything special. Right. The taco place is just being a perfect taco. God, I've never thought about this. All right. Well, are we getting into this? Because
let's do it.
Yeah.
Clock's running. Man.
Yep.
All right. So I've already taken you through the Danielle meal and the whole story where the soles fell off my shoes and it was super embarrassing.
Yeah.
And their amazing baguette crabs that they had, the bread that looked like crabs were just perfect. So what else did I told you about Bubby's, the Jewish place that strangely uses lard, which is fine. Where else did I go? I've got the notes. All right. So, you know, I'm not going to go through in chronological order. I'm actually going to talk about the places in order of the emotional impact on me. So we went to Xian's Famous Food, spelled X-I-A-N, Xian's Famous Food, grungy hole in the wall. Not a great dining room by any stretch, but it was a Western Chinese place. So like Western Chinese food is totally different from Eastern Chinese food. Western Chinese food is all about lamb and cumin. There's a lot of Islamic influence and it's just show-stopping. So I don't think I ordered as well as I could have if I was going to go back and do it again. We got an order of wontons.
Did it have a lot of Muslim influence in the cuisine?
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of lamb, a lot of like Middle Eastern spices.
I love Chinese food, man. And it's so much more diverse than people understand. And
in the Western, my God.
In the Western part of China, I'm sort of speaking out of turn, but the wine is not a thing. Alcohol is not a thing there. Like that's just it's such a predominantly Muslim era that would, but when you get cuisines that develop without alcohol, you get cuisines that develop in a different way, because you know, cuisines that develop with a culture of drinking have, you know, the food goes with the drinks, and in a culture that's developed without that, the food develops in a different way. So like, you've got these, just everything was super salty. And this cumin and lamb flavor, just absolutely amazing. And like hot chili. So it's a wheat culture. It's not rice. So instead of like, you know, food with rice, like you'd expect in, you know, the Hunan region, instead it's all wheat. So there were like lamb dumplings with a lot of, you know, a sort of a soy cumin broth that was around them. And then
sounds good.
This dish that was just called oil noodles, which was exactly what it sounded like. It was greasy pasta. Did you say
oil noodles?
Yeah,
really.
It was greasy pasta with a lot of hot chili on it, and it was banging. Awesome. And this is all. And then there was one more dish that was just like I wish we wouldn't have ordered the way we did in retrospect, because we had the lamb dumplings, which were like the wheat pasta with lamb inside. And then we had lamb noodles that were the wheat pasta rolled into noodles with lamb. And then we had the oil noodles, which were the lamb noodles without the lamb.
Like a whole wheat noodle?
No.
Or like soba or like
similar to wheat. It was like, imagine if you made pasta dough, like pasta dough without egg.
Yeah.
And just rolled it flat and then just tore it into sheets. That's what it was like.
Yeah, but was it the whole wheat or just refined flour? No,
it seemed like refined flour, but okay. I'm not
just curious
from a position of really knowing what I'm talking about. But
it just looked like white flour, right?
Yeah, looked like white flour. But okay. I wish that we had gotten something a little bit, like, you know, we're two people and we ordered three big dishes. And it ended up being like three dishes that were all kind of the same thing. And if I could go back, but the thing is, and this is where I'm going to kind of knock the place. If they had had, for instance, waiters and a proper printed menu, then there would have been a way to not do that. But instead you're ordering off a wall. And I don't know if you guys have spent much time in New York, but no one that lives and works in New York has any time for you. It is very much a culture of, can you hurry the fuck up and get the fuck out of my way? And that's if you're a server. Like, so it was really, really exciting food. But I feel like if someone had been able to shepherd us through it a little better, we could have ordered more intelligently. Having said that, jaw-droppingly delicious. I loved the food so much, I went back to my hotel room and pulled my phone out and ordered the cookbook.
Really? Oh, they have a cookbook. Really?
I haven't read it yet because I'm still stuck on another one. But dude,
and it's like, spelled X-I-A-N?
Yeah, Xian's Famous Foods is the name of the place.
Really? Which is Mission Chinese still a thing in New York?
I don't know if he closed his New York one. I think he's just got one in San Fran, right?
I was going to say Mission Chinese is Cali, right?
Yeah. I thought he had two, though.
Oh, yeah.
He definitely had two.
No, the Mission is a neighborhood in San Fran. That's where it got his name.
Oh,
I think it had. I think he opened one in New York, but he might have closed it.
Yeah, no, this place was not that fancy. This place, there was no wine list. There was a cooler that you grab a Diet Coke out of on your way to the counter. It was like that.
Gotcha. That's awesome.
But the food was fucking sick. It was really? So good.
Can you put that on the blog, man? I want to get some more info. Check it out.
Hotdogsandcaviar.blogspot.com. I'll put all this shit on the blog.
I fucking love Chinese food so much. I wanted to try Macanese food for ages.
Dude, I have never had Macanese food, but I'm fascinated by the idea. Like,
it's
China. Dude. It's like across the street from Shanghai, but it used to be a Portuguese colony. How can the food not be awesome?
Dude, fucking China. Yeah, just the Portuguese influence into Chinese culture and cuisine, like that alone, without even knowing anything about the food, that should just be getting your mouth watering. Dude, it's like, oh my fucking God.
Tempura is a Portuguese word.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Xian's Famous Foods was an interesting experience. The next place on my list, and this is a kind of personal for me because I went to school with the guy. I went to school with a young cook. I say young cook. He was young like me back then, and now he's old like me. His name's Ryan Bartlow. And he was always a sharp guy, but I had no idea the amount of talent he was hiding. And I knew he was going to be something when I turned on Iron Chef America and I saw him as the chef sous chef. And I was like, oh, okay. Cool. I guess he's the real deal. He has a tapas place in New York City called Ernesto's, and it's really fucking good. Like,
really?
We had so much food. We overordered so very, very badly. Like, I've never overordered this badly at a restaurant, and he set more stuff on top of that. I thought I was gonna die. So I wrote down everything that I remember eating. It can't be everything that we ate, but it's everything that I remember eating. So croquettes de gallina, like chicken croquettes that were just absolutely perfect. They were just absolutely perfect. They were like, they were about the size and shape of a tube of lipstick that was just like chicken stew, perfectly crispy fried on the outside, hot through and through, perfectly seasoned. And I don't like, I know
there were cylinders.
Yeah.
They look like lipstick tubes.
Yeah, like it was an annoying shape to do. Like it wasn't something that you could do with just a scoop. Like some poor fucker's like job.
Casing is, or?
I think they were.
Sausage casing or maybe, PVC or something?
No, I don't know if it was PVC. Maybe they just piped them and then cut them.
Yeah.
But it looked like, you know that feeling when you're a professional chef and you look at something and you'd be like, this has to be an unconscionable pain in the dick. You know what I mean? Like you're looking at something, you're like, I feel, you know, it's like when you have grapefruit cells and you're like, oh, I've been
again with the grapefruit cells.
Yeah, I'm never going to stop being mad at you.
Nate Shapiro is right there with you, man. I promise.
how is that fucker? He's good. So anyway, like the croquettes were fucking perfect. And then there was something called Pincho Matrimonio. And it was probably the single best food I've ever eaten. And I say this with great reverence because I have eaten, among other things, some food that you guys have made that was just show-stopping. I think probably the standout, the best thing that either of you made, and I don't know which one of you made it, but it was a roasted quail breast on top of an ice wine braised slice of Vidalia onion. with a piece of foie gras that was like the size of a human fist on top. So I don't remember which one of you did it. It doesn't matter. Both of your fingerprints are all over it. I'm saying I put this on the short list of best things I've ever eaten. First off, it was house-made puff pastry, which is hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pain in the ass.
And it was perfect. It was better than store-bought puff pastry, which I never say about house-made puff pastry, but it was. And it was layered with black and white, like the name, the matrimonio says marriage. It was layered with black and white anchovies. It was like a bocarone.
The puff pastry was.
The puff pastry was, it was blind baked with a weight on it. It was blind baked with a weight on it. So it was like puff pastry cracker. And then it was like a tart. And it was like a bocarone. And then like a really good salt packed anchovy filet. Ooh. All the way down. White, black, white, black, white, black. So two kinds of anchovies on a puff pastry tart.
Damn.
I'm not sure I've ever had anything better.
Is there anything else in there? I mean, that sounds fucking stellar.
So just perfect puff pastry and white and black anchovies.
Yep. It turns out you don't need anything else. As long as you've got some animal fat. I mean,
the butter is all baked into it. Oh, probably,
there was, sure there was butter all over it. That's
That sounds so fucking good.
I know.
That does sound awesome. Pincho matrimonio.
Pincho matrimonio. The next thing was a tortilla, like as in the Spanish restaurant tortilla. So like layers of potato and layers of egg, and served room temperature like you do. You know what I'm talking about, like the Spanish style omelet that's like layers of potato and a cold omelet.
Yep.
Yeah, but the yolk was still liquidy. I don't know how he did that.
Damn.
Like, I was just like, honestly, Ryan, I'm a little pissed. Like, it was crazy. It was really, really impressive. And then there was a Madrid-style tripe, which was like, it was just tripe braised in like a tomato sauce. It was really, really good. I love organ meats. Like, I'm always into like...
Yeah.
So what's Madrid style?
Honestly, I don't fucking remember. It was just really good. It was a long night. Then a dish. It was a big fillet of broiled eel over a plate of perfectly cooked and seasoned lentils that was nuts.
Dude, that sounds awesome.
Eel over lentils?
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds real
it
good.
Should.
Dude, that real powerful, oily eel. Ooh, yeah.
You guys need to go to New York and go to Ernesto's. And then I found out way later it was named after Ernest Hemingway, which how cool is that?
That's awesome.
Then there was a then there was a white asparagus dish. It was three perfectly braised white asparagus spears, and they were sitting in a puddle of Marcona almond puree with spices.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. God damn.
So did that kick the shit out of the one at Danielle?
You know what's funny? I have that in my notes, and I wasn't going to say it, but yes, I had two white asparagus dishes one day apart, and the one at the Tapas place that wasn't actually that expensive, but we made it expensive. But like the top, the one that was like $11 was like 20 times better than the one that was like 40.
Dude, tell me about the Marcona. So it was like a Marcona almond butter or like a Romesco sauce or something.
Yeah. It was similar to a Romesco. I took the notes that I took. Was
it super smooth? Was there any like,
it had some texture.
It had texture to it. Okay.
And it was just simple, and it looked like the sauce looked like it probably took 20 minutes to make, and it was just fucking great. It was so great.
Just badass ingredients.
Just badass ingredients. And Ryan, if you're hearing this and I got anything wrong, don't you judge me.
Judge him like crazy.
I was drunker than a poet on payday. No, it's okay. Ryan's dealt with me before. He knows what's going on.
If anybody knows you, then they know.
Yeah. What do you mean? So then the next up was, they just had salt cod, like bacalao and classic salsa verde. So just sweet. A big piece
fuck
of like poached salt cod and green sauce that was just you know, perfect. And then, oh my God, Morcia Consepia e Fabas.
Squid?
Yeah. Sepia is squid. So it was a squid and fava bean stew with Morcia Ooh. Blood sausage over the top of it.
Fuck. God damn, that sounds good.
This kid's food is legit. I say kid, he's probably 40. But like, yeah, it was just lights out bananas. There was, oh my God, the strawberry Napoleon. It wasn't anything fancy. It was just a strawberry Napoleon. So like.
They bring the puff pastry back?
Yeah, they brought the puff pastry back. So it was just perfectly executed puff pastry with like a vanilla mousseline and perfectly sliced ripe strawberries. And that's it. But God,
that's all you need, man.
If God if it's made done something right, better, he kept it for himself. It was just amazing. And then there was another dessert that was a little more creative, but in my opinion, less good. I'm not saying it was less good. I was saying the thing it was up against was a shining paragon of culinary perfection, whereas it was just really goddamn awesome. It was a sandwich cookie where it was like chocolate meringue. So it was like stiff baked meringue, like a cookie.
Uh-huh.
It was like a chocolate hazelnut meringue. Imagine a gigantic madeleine made with hazelnuts instead of almonds with like a perfect creme caramel and frozen chocolate filling.
Sounds good.
It was great, but the strawberry thing just blew
I'd order the strawberry.
The strawberry thing blew the fucking doors off it. They were both amazing.
But I like fruit desserts.
I do too. And I will point out that the hazelnut and chocolate thing showed more creativity and execution out of the pastry chef. Whereas the strawberry thing was just a very simple classic executed perfectly. So that was my whole meal at Ernesto's. And if I cannot recommend the restaurant more heartily. If there was ever a question who was the very best to come out of my classic cooking school, I honestly feel like I'm in the top five and I'm a nobody. But Ryan Bartlow, DJ Bilo, you fucking killed it.
That's awesome.
You made us all proud.
That's awesome, man.
Absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable food. And also just a hell of a nice guy.
Awesome.
Oh yeah. Cheers to that.
And then
where else? I want to go eat there so bad right now. That sounds so fucking good. Like every single thing you just said just sounds so awesome. I want that asparagus dish. I want that anchovy dish.
The anchovy pastry with the white and black anchovies on the puff pastry. If I only ever had to eat one thing for the rest of my life, it would be that.
So was it just like a square, circle, round, whatever shape of like pressed puff pastry, like an Arlette? Was it like an Arlette?
Yeah, did they bake it underweight or did they let it puff up and get all fluffy?
It was baked underweight. It was a puff pastry cracker. I don't remember what they had between the anchovies and the pastry. It must have been something. Cherie
taught me that.
Braised onions.
That shit is so God, I've never heard of that before.
But yeah, like every bite was just salt and different salt and butter and crisp and fishy richness.
What's the component of anchovy that's like I'm gonna get this wrong. I should have thought this out before I asked the question. It's like it has a similar effect of umami. It's what gives like fish sauce and anchovies like that second level of depth.
I don't know.
I remember reading about it in Cook's Illustrated years ago. It has a name. It's not. I shouldn't have
tease me, bro. Where are you?
All right, I'm gonna get right. Let me Google it. Hold on.
All right, yeah, Tarver, get your shit together because this is amazing.
No, anchovies have like, have you ever put like anchovies, like not just anchovy, like a few drops of fish sauce and like a standard bordelaise? Mm-hmm. It fucking just sends it, doesn't make it fishy at all, just kind of sends it through the roof.
I've never put fish sauce in bordelaise, but I have snuck anchovies into almost every kind of food.
Dude, you can it just boosts everything.
You ever have a peanut butter and anchovy sandwich?
peanut butter and anchovy sandwich? No.
No.
I have those two things right now.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Tarver, would I fuck with you about something like this?
No, I believe you. Dude, I mean, you guys have been to Two Amy's, right? I know you have, right?
Yeah, that was...
No, we went
together. Do the anchovies with bread and butter. Oh, yeah, we were all there together. It's the anchovies with bread and butter, that's fucking death row food, man.
That was the time where the server comes up and we each ordered a pizza, and then Nate goes, also, I would like all of the appetizers and snacks. and the server was like, wait, what? And the thing is, that's impressive because their menu had a big appetizer and snack section. It's
huge.
She's like, so the hams and the anchovies and all the charcuteries and all. Nate's like, yeah, all of it. All of everything. And the server's like, okay, it was us three and Logan. Or no, was it?
Was Logan there?
No, I went to I went there with Logan a different time.
Well, Logan was there.
Was it? It was us three and Logan.
Yeah,
I went there with Logan another time, and D and I showed up, and I was like, "Yeah, we're meeting a guy. He's always late." And the server's like, "Okay." I was like, "He looks like Thor," and she's like,
"Yeah."
Okay, so then Logan walks up to our table like 10 minutes later. He's like, "Thor, huh?" And I want to clarify,
did you hear about that?
This is before the movie came out. Say what?
Did you hear that Two Emmys burned down?
No.
No.
They rebuilt. They're back up and running. Okay,
good for them. Tarver, why are you fucking with my emotions, man? That's for those of you following along at home, Two Emmys.
Here it is. Oh, I fucking found it.
It's a
higher combination of glutamates and nucleotides. Nucleotides. It's higher in anchovies than most common ingredients that naturally have glutamates, which is where umami comes from. It's stronger than kelp, like all the, you know, especially the kelp that umami was discovered from, Parmesan, dried mushrooms, tomatoes, all that kind of stuff. Nucleotides. And it's also in Marmite. It's also in, it occurs naturally in soy sauce, but like fish sauce, anchovies, all derivatives of anchovy have nucleotides in it that have this. That's, oh, Jesus Christ, that took me forever. I'm so sorry. I feel like I completely lost the whole point, but like,
it's fine. No, the point is anchovies. You didn't lose it, man.
Link to me, would you?
Yeah, I will. Yeah,
also send that link to me and we'll put it up for Hot Dogs and Caviar at blankspot.com so that we can
add, I want to read that article.
It's Cooks Illustrated. The name of the article I'll send it to you is how to use science to boost umami when glutamates and nucleotides work together. That's when real savory magic happens. It was actually written in 1908, a chemist named Kikune Ikeda.
Is that the guy who isolated the MSG? Yep.
You're absolutely right. He's the one that discovered that, but later on, years later, he's the one that kind of broke it down even further and started talking about nucleotides. Yeah. God, fucking pop-ups, man. I swear to God. They're like flies. Like, we don't fucking need them. We don't need, like, what's the purpose of a fly? So sorry.
To spread fly jizz and make more flies. So what I feel like you just said was that all the times I've been like loudly crowing that anchovies were the best ingredient in the world, I've had a point.
You've had a point. You've had an absolute point.
Nothing more dangerous than a Jesse with a point.
So he's saying, like in this article, I'm just rereading it now for the first time in like years, but like, nucleotides are very prominent in bonito, which is one of the reasons why the combination of kombu with glutamates and bonito, which has nucleotides, is what makes dashi so strong. But like Caesar salad features
bonito is related to anchovies, right?
Smoked tuna.
Yeah, bonito.
Aren't they
more
in
like
the same family though? A tuna?
I think bonito is more in the tuna family.
I'm not a scientist, man. I'm a cook.
But anchovies have a huge hit of nucleotides and glutamate, which is what in this article. Like, I just sent you the article. Just read it. It's a really good one. But they're talking about how Caesar salad, which features features a synergy of anchovies, which contain a big hit of nucleotides and glutamate packed Parmesan. Even the humble cheeseburger, where cheese provides glutamate and beef and the beef supplies mild levels of nucleotides, puts the science into practice. Like it's nucleotides. Like you, like your love of anchovies over all these years have been sound for sure. Like there's a reason to it.
What about what about my love of pro wrestling and amateur porn?
No, there's no point. There's no Cooks Illustrated.
I was just checking. I thought maybe I'd float that in there.
It's like glutamate and nucleotides. See, the glutamate comes from the amateurs, and the nucleotides come from the sweat from the pro wrestlers. And when they mix, it's like a flavor bomb.
Why can't someone combine amateur porn and wrestling? Like you can combine all the other good things. I feel like that would be the most entertaining thing in the world.
I feel like you could probably find that.
I'm pretty sure that exists already. If you can buy a girl's fart on eBay, I'm pretty sure there's some sort of porn wrestling. There has to be.
Yep, you can't, and you can buy a girl's fart. If I wanted to go online right now and buy a 19-year-old's bathwater, I could. Is that a good thing? No, the world is a dark and lonely place.
This is a dark and very lonely place.
The point is it's technically possible. Hey, by the way, Hot Dogs and Caviar is a family podcast. But the thing is, it's a family podcast, but every family has a guy like me. So, all right. So, can I get to the last restaurant?
How are your three kids doing? Our kids are doing great. They're going to Harvard and Princeton and Yale. They're just doing so good. Yeah, but you have four kids. Oh, Jesse's out back. Jesse's out back. He's just
dude. My brother is a classical cellist, special ed teacher, father of four. And then there's me.
Your shirt says it all. Is that Charles Bronson?
Yes, Charles Bronson.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I know. Awesome. Everything about me is awesome. Welcome to the same page. All right, so guys, this episode is going to be like 1,000 years long. So I had one more restaurant, and this one is actually like everybody shake it off. I know that the jokes about amateur porn have been hella fun, but this next one I actually kind of want to get into. I went to Nobu.
Oh, nice!
Really.
Yeah, and it was one of those where, like, it wasn't that I had a burning desire to go to Nobu. It wasn't like Danielle, where it was like a box I had to check. And it wasn't like Xi'an Famous Foods, where it was like a new style of cuisine that I'd never experienced that I wanted to get into. And it wasn't like Ernesto's, where it was someone who was a friend growing up. This one, I just wanted to go because it was weird that I hadn't been. You know, there's restaurants like that. Like if I had a chance to go to, I don't know, I'd remember to California, but if I had a chance to go to Spago, if someone's like, hey, you want to go to Spago? I'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, let's check out Spago. A restaurant that while I don't have any specific love for, I just feel like I should check that box. You know, increasingly French Laundry is getting into that territory, which is, it hurts to say that out loud. And by the way, my review of his most recent cookbook is still forthcoming. I just have to make one more thing. It's just that making one more thing could be a 6-month process because they're Thomas Keller recipes. But I went to Nobu, and first off, the place is a machine. Like two floors of dining room. We got there at like 9:45, and the place was balls to the wall. Like
really
busy, not showing any signs of stopping. Like by the time we were done, it was like pushing 1 a.m. and it was starting to calm down. And I was like, okay, this place is a fucking mill.
Jeez.
You know, like a license to print money. But on the other hand, you'd need a license to print money if you had to pay rent where they were, which was like right in the heart of the financial district, street level in a skyscraper.
So they're like, breaking even.
Yeah, they're breaking even. I was like, well, this place probably has the highest lease of any building I've ever been inside. But on the other hand, they're cranking money. And the thing that was interesting about Nobu, okay, Tarver, you're a musician.
I try.
But like, think about a band that's just been done to death, like Pink Floyd or Led Zeppelin.
Sure.
Like a band that you've heard of, you've heard a million bar bands do like Rock and Roll by Led Zeppelin. You know what I mean? Like you've heard million bar bands do what's a very often covered Pink Floyd song, like Run Like Hell or Another Brick in the Wall. You know what I mean? Like Nobu was like that. Nobu was like a couple of the dishes that I got. I'd had them before exactly like the hamachi. They do a thin slice of hamachi with a little slice of jalapeno on it, and then they splash like a dressing of like yuzu and soy around it, and so you pick up the whole piece and carry the slice of serrano pepper and you drag a lot of the marinade up, eat it like that. Not only have I had that dish, I've had it 8 times. Like, it's interesting to go to a restaurant that's been copied so much, a place that's so influential that by the time you finally have the genuine article, it feels derivative. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like maybe the French Laundry might be like that at this point. Like,
I mean, I can see where you're coming from. I feel like there are aspects of the French Laundry that
I want to clarify that I've never been to the French Laundry. The only time I've ever had Thomas Keller's food was at Bouchon Vegas, and that was brunch. So I'm coming to this strictly from a place of conjecture, from a place of reading.
I ate it per se like a year or two after they opened, and I'll start with a negative. Like, there was a couple of courses, probably like 2 or 3 out of however many it was. I mean, at least 10 that were like more than forgettable. Like, I can remember them because they were so bad. There was one with like, it was sweetbreads, Belgian endive, and this like, I want to say a velouté made out of banana. That was, I wish they, I don't know how that made it past the pass, but everything else was beyond the stars. I mean, oysters and pearls are still on the menu because it's fucking awesome. And I mean, like,
Grant Achatz described that dish as the best thing you'll ever put in your mouth.
Yeah.
And he is notoriously a hard motherfucker. So if he says it's good,
yeah,
it's good.
It is.
He's like one of 3 people in the world I'm physically afraid of. Like, it's just... Sorry, TK.
Hey, you should like look. I don't know. Reread that recipe. It's a bitch. There is a lot of components that go back and forth. You're utilizing oyster liqueur in like multiple sections of it. Like, it's not just cooking tapioca. Like, it's a lot.
Nothing but respect for the French Laundry line cooks. Like, when I was doing my review of his new book, French Laundry Per Se Cookbook, which I still haven't come out with. I already said this, but like, I still have to make the marjolaine. I've got half the stuff for it, but it's not so easy. I was doing his recipe for a chicken roulade, and Dee came home. She had been out shopping for like 7 hours, like one of those days where she just leaves the house and does errands, and came home after all the errands, and the kitchen was destroyed. Like, pots and pans and fucking chicken carcasses and everything. And she looks around, and I couldn't have planned this better if I was this Hollywood screenwriter. She's like, maybe you got a little ambitious today. And I just looked at her. I looked at her and was like, this is one fucking recipe. And she's like, she was just like, oh, what? Okay. wasn't even. And then after we tasted it, I was exhausted. I'd been cooking for 12 hours. We tasted it, and she's like, well, that is the best piece of chicken I've ever had. And I was like, I wish I could say it wasn't.
Yeah.
But it was.
You want to.
Like, as much as I want to shit on this for ruining my life.
Yeah.
It was.
I think what I was trying to correlate between the comparison between like something like Nobu and the French Laundry, like, yeah, Nobu, like that, when I remember when Nobu's book first came out, was like the 90s, right?
Book is awesome.
Late 90s,
at least that was when I first heard. Yeah, at least that's when I first heard about it. And I remember, like, you know, if there wasn't a cookbook, I was reading about it in magazines at that time. I used to, like, you know, back then there was no there was barely internet. Like, it was like reading Bon Appetit Gourmet and Wine Spectator and all that kind of stuff. And I remember reading about Nobu all the time, but like, I guess my point is like, yeah, a lot of that stuff was cutting edge, but there was a lot of people doing similar things. You know, there was Ming Tsai, there was Roy Yamaguchi, Alan Wong, you know, like a lot of these guys that were doing that kind of similar.
You make a damn good point.
But nobody was doing what the French Laundry was doing. Like, the French Laundry before Beauchamp and Persei and all that kind of stuff, nobody was doing it. And every chef in the world was just like, there was no internet, but they were just like scouring publications and any kind of gossip to find out what Thomas Keller was doing. Like Charlie Trotter was a big deal. Like, all these guys are huge. Nobody gave a fuck about anything but Thomas Keller. Like that dude. And when his book finally came out, it sent shockwaves everywhere. I mean, like, I wonder who came out first, Michelle Braz or French Laundry.
French Laundry came out first.
Yeah, Michelle Braz came out in like 99, I think.
The only reason I ask is because I remember Michelle Braz's book having a similar effect, at least on me and a lot of people
we
worked with, you know, like the Gargoyle, like that thing. You don't, like, nobody does that. Nobody does the Gargoyle. Like, nobody does Oysters and Pearls. I mean, like, I've seen a lot of people try and replicate and copy the salmon cornet. When I was at the inn, Patrick did one. It was exactly the same thing. It was just like seasoned differently. And like, all the cooks were just like, come on, man. Like, there's one guy who does this, the salmon cornet. Like, there's one dude. But now, like, I see people doing it.
Now it's a, like, it's the difference between covering Smells Like Teen Spirit 2 years after it came out or 30 years after it came out. That's the difference, is that, like, at this point, it's an accepted.
I could imagine hearing Smells Like Teen Spirit in a car commercial right now.
But if a band covered Smells Like Teen Spirit, that would be seen as ballsy, but not a crime. Whereas if a band had done that in the year 2000, it'd be like, who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
That being said, like, a lot of the things that Nobu, there was some other stuff I remember from Nobu. It was like, I remember the hamachi, like the yuzu ponzu, or like the just the yuzu ponzu in general. Like, I'm sure that's been around for hundreds of years in Japan, but like, he really made a lot of Japanese cuisine a lot more famous. Like, he kind of basically, launched a lot of Japanese food, especially in America. This is before Food Network or anything like that.
The interesting thing about what he was doing is some of the stuff that he was doing was so antithetical to Japanese cuisine. Like, he was using garlic and chili peppers during a time when in Japanese cuisine, those ingredients just weren't there. They just don't exist.
Yeah.
But he spent some time in Peru. And so he's like, okay, people here like garlic and peppers. Before he came to the US, he spent a few years in Peru and sort of touched off Peruvian Japanese cuisine.
I fucking love Peruvian food, man. Is there Peruvian restaurants where you are?
Nate, is there? Was that
just that one place we went to? I don't even know if it's still there, man.
The big pile of fried potatoes with the sliced up hot dogs and the mayonnaise. I would eat that right now.
Dude, Peruvian food is so fucking good. Like, I think isn't Lima the capital of Peru? I think there's like two restaurants in the top, the Pellegrino top 10 last year. Like, Peruvian cuisine is fucking unbelievably good.
Well, guys, why the fuck aren't we going to Peru right now?
Seriously, like, climbing Machu Picchu is one of my bucket list things, for real.
Oh, like, God, that looks like a lot of work, but I want to go eat all the food.
It's closed, so you have the excuse. Don't worry, we can't.
Right. Carver, I'm way too fat for that. But going to Lima and eating all the food, that I want to do. Okay, so we decided that we need to have a hot dog eating contest and we need to go to Peru.
Let's start with the hot dog thing and test our resolve for the rest.
The gauntlet is down, motherfucker.
All right. Step one, who can eat the most hot dogs?
Peru. This has maybe been in the top five most sensible conversations we've ever had. All right, James, well, looking at the clock, this episode has gone on longer than normal, but I've also had a great time, but this episode has gone longer than normal. To all of you listeners at home, We have just had the best time. Like, I felt tonight, I really forgot that we were doing a podcast.
I did.
It felt we were just, felt like we were just spitballing about food with two of the best guys that I know. That's me and Tarver. And then Nate, you're okay.
I'm the most okayest guy there is.
I describe myself in front of a table. I was like, I'm Charleston's okayest bartender. And the guest that I was serving just died.
That's awesome.
It's been great. This has been a really, really fun one. All right, dudes. Great session. Great podcast. I'll talk to you guys later.